How's it going, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Homeward Path Podcast. This is the show by me, Adam, an MTG dad, for all of you out there who are like me in a position where you don't have a lot of time or finances with which to play competitive Magic the Gathering. So, this past week, we've had to deal with a lot of Twitter drama, and I thought I would like to give a quick shout out to this community, specifically the Constructive Criticism community and everybody else who's reached out in support of this show and all of the others on that network, and say thank you to all of you for being awesome. Because it is really easy to get caught up in all of the anger and the filth, the mudslinging that gets thrown around on places like Reddit and Twitter, and I am so glad that this community is what it is, and we don't do that. So I will hold you guys up on a pedestal for that, and thank you again for being such a good community, because clearly that is not the most public face of the competitive scene. Having said that, moving on to brighter topics. We had a Grand Prix in Prague this past weekend. It was modern, and it was won by a very surprising thing. We had a Star City Games Open in Baltimore, which was also modern and also won by a surprising deck. So we're going to unpack a little bit of that. We're going to unpack the two winning decks and a deck that really made a statement this past weekend. And then we're going to get into, along the same lines, well, not quite the same lines, but on a similar vein, anyway, we're going to get into why we play the formats that we do, and specifically why I play the formats that I do, because, again, limited time constraints, limited budget, you got to have a good reason. But first, I've got to thank the people that make this show possible. It starts with the ConstructiveCriticism.com network. Guys, if you meet Spencer Howland, give him a hug. Like, that man works harder than anybody has any business doing. Full-time job, and manages this network, and is a husband and father. Like, he deserves the praise. So, do that. Check out all of the other content on the network. Do yourself that favor. The other two podcasts on this network are fantastic. The streaming content is fantastic. Just do it. Just check it out. Do yourself that favor and interact with the community, please. Our other sponsor is inkedgaming.com, and I promise I will find a way to make the pun-based segue. It will come to me in the middle of the show at some point, and it will happen. But our sponsor is inkedgaming.com. They have playmats, deck boxes, like all of the accessories you could possibly need. And you can get custom designs, or you can get pre-designed like inventory pieces that they've got that are, a lot of them are either hilarious or amazing. So do yourself that favor. Check them out. If you use the promo code CCMTG10 at checkout, that's the number 10. You can get 10% off your order. So do it. I'm still trying to figure out what I want my first order to be, but I'm going to be ordering something from there in the fairly near future, and I will be sharing it with everybody. So my goal is to get a playmat that I really like, that I also feel comfortable having signed by everybody that I meet when I start traveling to more events. So that's my plan here. Moving on, again, we had the Grand Prix, and we had the Star City Games Open this week. Now, the Grand Prix was won by probably the craziest deck, and that was the Hardened Scales Affinity deck. For those of you who don't know what that is, take the black-green Constrictor deck in Standard, where you're just kind of this mash of green creatures that put, you know, you're this mashup of a bunch of +1/+1 counter synergies. And you dial the +1/+1 counter synergies up to 11, but then you also introduce a lot of artifact synergy. Like, you are two synergies in one, and both of them are powerful. And the overlap between them is exceptional, thanks to the card Arcbound Ravager and the modular mechanic in general. Cards like Walking Ballista and Hangerback Walker need no introduction in combination with Hardened Scales. Getting an extra counter on entry and then another extra counter every time you use the effect is obviously powerful with Hardened Scales. Like, just, it's silly. Those don't need a lot of, those don't need help for me to explain why they're good. On balance, Arcbound Ravager is a special kind of good in this deck. Because it enters with an extra counter, as everything that enters with a counter does in this deck. But it also gets an extra counter every time you activate it by sacking an artifact. But it also adds an extra counter to its own modular when you sacrifice itself to dump its counters onto something else while you're trying to kill your opponent. Like, where the black-green snake deck is trying to do this, you know, trying to leverage these +1/+1 counter synergies to create this dominating battlefield position, this deck's just trying to kill you. It wants to kill you quick, fast, and in a hurry, and do it in a way that's difficult for you to interact with profitably. And it's made possible by the fact that a lot of the decks that people are playing to beat up on humans are filled with spot removal. Like, I'd imagine this deck having a pretty fair Mardu Pyromancer matchup, just because once you field multiple threats, every time you go to kill one, it either shoots you in the face, makes more threats, or dumps its counters onto something else on the table. Like, it's really hard to interact with that correctly. So I would imagine that's part of the reason this deck did so well, is because of the prevalence of decks like Jeskai Control and Mardu Pyromancer. Like, it just looks like it lines up really well. But it's also just a linear deck in a format where, you know, having the wrong sideboard hate can cause you to lose matches. So that's another thing. It was someone who was clearly comfortable playing their deck, and it had a really good weekend. On balance, the deck from the Baltimore Open that ended up winning, I mean, whew, I love me some Blue-White Spirits. I wanted to play Blue-White Spirits when Spellqueller and friends were in Standard, and I didn't, and I regret that decision. Because I love exploiting the concept of tempo when I'm playing Magic. It's one of my guilty pleasures. Being able to interact with my opponent while adding pressure to my board, or being able to pressure the board really early and then be able to interact from there with a little bit of a lead. The analogy I like to draw is those Indianapolis Colts teams under Peyton Manning, where you could come out and strike really fast and then spend the rest of the game pinning your ears back and going after the quarterback. In other words, killing everything that they do with a little bit of a lead. Just make sure they don't do anything particularly broken. Or you can use that mentality of just pinning your ears back and going after the stuff that they're doing to catch you up if they come out faster. And then what you're doing on the more offensive side of your deck tends to close the game in short order in that regard too. Like, as long as you can stay somewhere around your opponent's level, your cards are powerful enough to do the job. And this particular, the Blue-White Spirits deck is good. It was also a big weekend for that archetype as a whole, Spirits as a whole. Basically, it boils down to what centerpiece card you want to have. Because the core for both kind of the split in the archetype, both versions of it, the core is the same. It's just which flash card advantage engine you want. In Blue-White, it tends to be Aether Vial, allowing you to save on mana. Being able to deploy more of your creatures during your opponent's turn gives you less of a reliance on rattle chains and leaves you, you know, makes you a little bit less soft to counter spells. On balance, Bant Spirit splashes for Noble Hierarch so you can cast a card like Spellqueller faster. You know, you can cast your powerhouse threes in Spellqueller, Drakeskull Captain, these cards that are powerful within this shell. But you also get Collected Company, which allows you to deploy multiple threats during your opponent's turn. And that's also bonkers. You know, both cards offer a mana advantage, collected company, in the savings you get based on the number of creatures you hit, and Aether Vial just progressively over the course of a game, but that's really the spirit of things, if you will. Huh? Anyone? Okay. But the deck as a whole lines up really well against the format right now for a lot of reasons. One, in a deck that has Rattle Chain, so you can give a creature hexproof, you can make your creatures have flash, you can interact by, you know, if you have a Rattle Chains on the board, you can flash in a Selfless Spirit. You can Mausoleum Wanderer to counter a removal spell. All of these things are really good against the decks people are trying to play to beat up on humans. Specifically Selfless Spirit, like that card is up. Beating against the blue-white X, you know, Jeskai Esper or blue-white control, because it's one of the few ways to profitably interact with a Supreme Verdict. You can't counter it, but you can Spellqueller it. You can exile it from the stack. You can also make your creatures indestructible and just negate it functionally. You spend two mana and a card to say no to Supreme Verdict. So you get to counter that card frequently without countering it. And a lot of the other cards that are starting to show up as technology, as ways to get around what people are doing, cards like Settle the Wreckage don't line up favorably against Spellqueller. Just cheap, you know, the kinds of removal spells that people are playing in Modern don't line up particularly well against this deck, and that's a big deal. And you get to do a lot of this interacting with your opponent while adding to your board, and you just keep the pressure on. And then Supreme Phantom and Drogskull Captain make that clock a little bit shorter, and your opponent's got the feeling that they're being tortured by the Spanish Inquisition sometimes. It's what happens. I love this deck. If I were not already all the way in on Martyr Pyromancer, or as far as one can be without having, you know, cards like Engineered Explosives or Liliana the Veil or Blood Moon, if I were not already way in on Martyr Pyromancer, I would be looking really hard at Blue-White Spirits. Because that deck is exactly what I like to do in Magic, and I think it's something I would enjoy doing in Modern. But the deck that had the biggest kind of breakout this weekend was Blue-White X Control. Now, I have not been a fan of this archetype. I'm not a big fan of Cryptic Command decks in Modern. But that doesn't mean I'm not wrong. This deck, the blue-white control in particular, showed up in big numbers this weekend. Putting up, if I'm not mistaken, I don't even want to quote a number because I don't want to be wrong. But there were a lot of them. There were a sizable number of Cryptic Command control decks between the top 32s in both events. And not many of them made top 8, admittedly. They did not break through into the elimination rounds. But it just takes a Search for Escanta activation finding the right card to change that. Like, that is a deck that you play if you are really comfortable playing interactive Magic to a fault. Where you are comfortable with sometimes not actually being able to win the game and just hoping your opponent scoops out of frustration. Not because you don't have win conditions, like the decks have Teferi and Gideon and Jace and Snapcaster and Colonnade, but because your opponents are gonna do everything they can to make sure you don't win the game either. Especially when you're in fair matchups. But on the whole, it's a deck that just, it lines up really well against humans. If humans is the best deck, this is the best anti-humans deck. Mardu Pyromancer being a close second. But this is the best anti-humans deck. And this is the best anti-humans deck that also represents a fairly good matchup against combo. Between your main deck amount of, you know, counter magic and removal, and then you get to sideboard into additional counter magic, and maybe even a little bit more disruption, depending on your build. You know, a card like Spellqueller is not an uncommon sight in the sideboards of blue-white, or at least it used to not be. I can't speak for experience now, but it was a card that showed up a lot. Because when you sideboard into it against combo, you can nab something like I don't know. Let's say a Gifts Ungiven. You exile a Gifts Ungiven, and they have to kill your Spellqueller to get their gifts back while that Spellqueller is bashing them for two every turn. That applies a little bit of pressure and keeps your opponent off of their combo. It gives you an additional threat. I mean, it just looks like a card that lines up really well. It looks like a strategy that lines up really well. And I really particularly am fond, if I had to pick a Cryptic Command deck, I would pick straight blue-white. The mana's better, so you are not... You can be at the mercy of Blood Moon at times because you don't have anything to do with the red mana. But you're also in blue and white, so you have enchantment removal and counter spells. You are in blue and white, so you have access to the best counter spells and the best targeted sideboard cards. And you're only two colors, so you can get away with playing all four copies of Field of Ruin and not have any difficulty casting your spells on time. Like, that's a big deal right now. Being the control deck that can actually just beat up on Tron. But, you know, sideboard into something like Crucible of Worlds alongside your Field of Ruin, and your opponent doesn't ever actually get to cast their spells on time. So that's something to look at. That's something meaningful about this deck. But on the whole, the biggest thing we can take away from this weekend in Modern is that it's still a format that is largely wide open, but people are starting to figure out it's a format where there's a constant ebb and flow. A deck will pick up in popularity, and then something that counterplays to it shows up in bigger numbers. And then something that counterplays to that shows up in bigger numbers, and that allows the first deck to come back. It's a cyclical format. If you wait long enough, your deck is going to be great. So, with that out of the way, let's move on to our main topic for the evening. The main topic this evening is... why do we play the formats that we do? Why do I play the formats that I do? Again, I am a husband, I'm a father, I work a full-time job. I don't have a lot of time for Magic, and I really don't have a lot of money for Magic. But I still love it, I still play it, and I still devote what little free time I do have to doing so. Like, to enjoying it. It's what I do. It's why I do this show. So why do I play the formats that I do? I play four formats, and I haven't actually spent cash money on Magic in the last 2 years. So for me to invest what little capital I do have into playing a format, there better be a good reason. And I got to thinking about this over the weekend because my wife was working 11-hour shifts Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I had the kids to myself. You get a lot of time to think in that situation if you don't know that. I got to thinking, and when I get to thinking, I get to evaluating. And there's a good financial reason for three of the four formats I play, and there's a good gameplay reason for all of them. You could argue that there's a financial reason for the fourth, but we'll get there. The financial reason that I play Standard is, well, it's the most popular format, so it's the one I'm most likely to find an event for. If we're, you know, out somewhere for the weekend and I just happen to bring my cards with me and we stop by a game store, there's probably going to be a Standard event. It's the safest pick. It's also the format that, you know, if you're going to try to grind your way onto the Pro Tour, it's the one that seems to offer the quickest avenue. You know, that and Limited. It's also the cheapest format you can buy into in order to think about trying to qualify for the Pro Tour. So it was also just the easiest starting point for me when I came back into the game in 2016. So I've just kind of stuck with it. From the gameplay perspective, Standard allows me to flex a muscle that I don't get to do in any other format that I play. And that is the metagaming muscle. What I mean by that is Standard is a format that, because of its small size, because of how homogenized the lists tend to get pretty quickly, players tend to kind of lock into what they're doing really quickly in the process, and the shifts in the metagame tend to be very violent. Every time a new set comes out, everything flips on its head. Every time we rotate, things flip on their head. And unfortunately, over the last 2 years, every time they ban cards, things flip on their head. But we experience these violent swings, and especially in today's day, in the day and age we're in now, where there's all this coverage over decks, and there's all this talk about the best deck, finding the best deck. As soon as somebody says something's the best deck, it gets flocked to. And that's what makes metagaming so important to Standard. Because you can position your 75 against what everybody else is playing based on the information at your disposal and expect to do well. It's not like Modern, where the best deck occupies maybe 10% of the format. We've had best decks over the last 2 years that have occupied half the format. Whether it was the energy mid-range deck, whether it was the red Goblin Chain Whirler decks, whether it was, you know, Martyr Vehicles versus Four Colors Saheeli. Like, we've had decks that occupied half the format. It can't be wrong to metagame in that situation. To skew your deck a little bit toward what you're expecting to face. My first experience doing this successfully was during Jund Cascade's reign in Standard, and it's been something that I've really enjoyed doing ever since, and that's the biggest draw to me for playing Standard, is being able to play on like a level or half a level above what everybody else is doing, trying to be in that position. I don't want to go too far and wind up bad against the decks that people are playing to beat the best deck. But I want to be in a position where I can play something that'll beat the best deck. And that's somewhere I find myself fairly comfortable being in Standard. I did it for the last 2 years playing Blue X Control. I did, depending on what type of decks I was expecting to face, I would play Blue White against a bigger, like, over-the-top style mid-range metagame. If I was up against a faster, more aggressive metagame, I would do blue-red, because the red removal was faster and a little bit more versatile. If I was up against kind of a mid-speed aggro, whether it was something like Martyr Vehicles or Martyr Vehicles or the bigger lists of red, I tended to go in the direction of blue-black control. But I just kind of stayed within this shell, this range of blue control decks, and I would change out the supporting characters appropriately. On balance and Modern, it seems to reward, instead of being the format where you are rewarded by in gameplay by metagaming, you are rewarded in gameplay by tuning your deck. Sticking with your deck is one of the best things you can do in Modern. Playing something you are comfortable with, because it's a complicated format and nothing occupies more than 10-15% of the field. So skewing your numbers to try to beat up on something you expect to see a lot of only really works if you're in a really inbred metagame. Like, if you know you're playing a locals and you know what everybody's playing, then it's okay. But if you're going to anything bigger than that, just play something you're comfortable with and make sure you got a chance. You know, tune your deck, try to stretch your resources in such a way that you have as close to coin flip matchups across the board as you can. Or if you're playing one of the unfair decks, you want as many 80-20 matchups as you can get. You want to be 80% against as many people as you can and know what your 20% is and sideboard accordingly. Like, that's really the biggest gameplay thing I can say for Modern. And that's the biggest advantage it gives me. Because I have been someone who is really comfortable when I get to stick with a deck for a while. I'm still taking my lumps on Mardu Pyromancer, but it is definitely something that I feel will pay off in the long term. From the financial side, that part ties hand in hand with the first. Your cards don't rotate. The cards are expensive. The upfront investment is huge. Especially if you're in a situation like mine. It is a huge upfront investment. But it's an investment that represents growth over time. Every time you play your Modern deck and win prizes, you're paying off some of that investment. Once you've paid off part of that investment, you can reinvest into the deck and make it better. which means it might win more, which means you might get better prizes, which you can then reinvest to continue the trend or to invest in other formats to lessen the financial burden of those formats. That's how I ended up in Modern in the first place. I was doing that with Standard. And I'm looking for the Modern deck to help me do the same now. So, I mean, Modern is very much the format Legacy 2, but Modern is the one that I have any kind of experience with. It's the format that rewards you picking a deck, sticking to it, and mastering it. Now, the third format I play, the financial reason, is really straightforward. And speaking of really straightforward financial decisions, check out our sponsor at InkGaming.com. Use that promo code CCMTG10 at checkout and get your money's worth for your accessories. Anyway, the next format I play, the financial reason for it is really straightforward. Like, there's no getting around it. The financial reason behind it is the most straightforward one there is. That format is Pauper. It's the cheapest competitive format, like, bar none. Because your top-tier Pauper deck, if you're not playing specifically something with Oubliette or something with snow-covered lands, is not going to run you more than like $50-$60. That's not a lot of money to be on one of the better decks in a format. It is a format that very much rewards gameplay. It, you know, financially, it is the most cost-effective format, especially if you are in a locals like mine where it's played quite a bit. On balance, the gameplay reason for Pauper for me, I love tempo. That is my favorite abstract concept to exploit when I'm playing a game. Even, you know, being able to start off behind and catch myself up slowly, you know, not fall so far behind that the door gets slammed shut in my face, and be able to stabilize and play, you know, behind some kind of a threat. That's the controlling line for tempo, but the aggressive line for tempo is relevant too, where you stick a threat and protect it, either by removing your opponent's threats or by interacting with your opponent's attempts to interact with it. You know, whatever the case may be, you want your opponent to feel like you were never out of it, and that is the thing I enjoy the most about playing Pauper. So many games come down to who leverages their cards the best. You know, you can lose games in Pauper to your opponent having a really fast start that you just can't catch up to, and that's part of tempo. But I have had really fast starts and found myself in the single digits and scratched and clawed my way back into them too. So it's a format that really feels like it rewards the gameplay aspect of Magic more than really any other that I've played. And I mean that. So, I mean, it was really hard for me to turn it down once I discovered that it existed. Once I played a few games of Pauper, I was hooked, and that just has not changed. And then the last format that I play is Commander. And I know a lot of you are going to want to reach over and turn your media players off. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. There is a very good reason for Commander in my palette, as it were. Financially, obviously, it doesn't make a ton of sense. Unless you're going to Grand Prix regularly and winning four-man pods a lot, you're not getting money back out of that format. You're just not. You know, unless your local FNM plays a lot of Commander, you're not getting money back out of that format. You know, financially speaking, it is just a money pit. You are sinking capital into it for not anticipating much, if any, of a game. On balance, the gameplay reason for Commander ties into its financial solvency. And that is, it allows me to do wild, crazy things that I want to do in competitive formats without having to spend money on them in those competitive formats. And that is good for a lot of reasons. First and foremost, it allows me to get that out of my system before I sit down to play a more competitive format. Before I sit down to build a more competitive deck, I've got those like, oh, I really want to try this out. I've got that out of my system. I can look at the format through the lens of competitive play and be ready to build a deck that I feel can compete versus trying to build one that I think looks cool. I get my cool, I get my, my danger of cool things out of the way in Commander. But more than that, every once in a while you can stumble upon something by playing Commander that you want to try in another format. A really good example is the first time I played the Commander deck that I'm on now, it convinced me that I wanted to play Mardu Pyromancer in Modern. Because initially I was not very fond of that deck, but then I play my Commander deck is a Spellslinger deck that plays a lot of Pyromancer-style payoffs and interaction and card draw. And when I played that, it felt really, it felt like something I could be really comfortable doing, and I thought, let's try it in Modern. So I did, and I love that deck too. So, you know, just because the format is not competitive, just because you are never, ever, ever going to make it onto the Pro Tour playing Commander, doesn't mean there's not a good reason to. The other advantage to Commander is it gives you a break from the grind of the competitive game. Once in a while, I just want to sit down with three or four friends and play Magic for the sake of playing Magic. I want to see what somebody else is going to do and be surprised by it. And if you're playing the relentless competitive grind, you never get to do that. And when you do, you tend to kind of wrinkle your nose at it. So getting to do that in a setting where it's encouraged is something that's just healthy for me as a Magic player. And that's really the long and short of it. You know, that's the reason why I play the formats that I do. There's a financial and a gameplay reason for all of them. For Standard, it's the most popular format. It's the one I can most readily find an event to play, and it allows me to practice metagaming. For Modern, it's a format where I can build a deck, hang on to it, and master it, and just watch myself improve based on how well I play the deck. In Pauper, I get to do my favorite thing that I get to leverage in competitive Magic, and it's super cheap. And in Commander, I get to use Commander to avoid doing the things that I would normally try to do in these other formats, and I get to have fun while I do it. So, you know, that's why I play the formats that I do. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode, guys. Thanks for listening. If you want to reach the show, you can tweet me at HomewardPathMTG. You can send me a message on Facebook. Add me as a friend on Facebook. My name is Adam Spain. You can join the Facebook groups, either the Constructive Criticism family or the Homeward Pathfinders. I know for a fact the Homeward Pathfinders is open invite. You just have to say join and I'll say yes and you can start posting. You can join the conversation directly. If you want to donate to the show, if you feel like you are getting something back out of anything that I'm saying, and you feel like you want to help me continue to get this message out, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. We don't have any Patreon shoutouts this week, so, you know, take that how you want. We do have another outreach program, and it is my favorite. It is my social media outreach program. I like to try to have fun on this show. If you didn't notice earlier in the show, I really like my dad humor. So I thought it would be fun to incorporate that into the show as a standing segment. So this is hashtag MTG dad jokes, and it's exactly what it sounds like. You can send them on Twitter, you can put them in any of the Facebook groups, or you can just send them to me. I don't care. I'm gonna laugh at them. And we have a few entries this week, most of them from guys in my LGS. Hunter Smith wrote in, first and foremost, this is an oldie but a goodie, and I'll share it every time. Why is John Avon bad at Magic? And that's because he mostly draws lands. He mostly draws land. Maybe he plays ramp? I don't know. Anyway, another one, and this was a gem. I was proud of him for this one. He said, did you hear about the guy who tried to wasteland his opponent's strip mine? He discovered that a mine is a terrible thing to waste. I laughed at that for about 10 minutes. I did. I legitimately laughed at that joke for about 10 minutes. The next one comes from Kevin McGrath in the Homeward Pathfinders Facebook group and our current only patron, who said, Noble Hierarch, Tassiger, and Dark Confidant walk into a bar. They lean up on the counter, and Hierarch and Confidant are struck dead on the spot. Tassiger turns around absolutely horrified and looks at the bartender and says, "What in the world just happened?" And the bartender says, "Oh, this is a minus one counter." Anyway, and then Cole Rogers says, "I can't play magic with my significant other because she's always trying to make... I can't play magic with my significant other because she's always trying to make me strip mine clothes." Anyone? Okay. But yeah, if you have any good submissions for this, please send them in. I will enjoy every single one of them. They may not all make it into the show just because time constraints, but I remember my favorites every week and I share them, and I will make sure I let everybody know who told the joke. So that's the final buzzer for this week, guys. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you choose to come back next week. Until then, keep at it. Enjoy the game.